This is Barry Teichner of the University of Wisconsin Archives Oral History Project. Today is December 29th in the year 2000, a snowy, snowy December 29th and a cold December 29th. I'm in Steenbach Library where Jennifer Gilbride Brown and I are going to conclude the interview that we began yesterday. We kind of got us up to this semester yesterday. Let's set the stage for I think what will probably be a fairly critical semester in CRC's history. How do you see the semester developing?
Well, this semester we've got, it seems like a million transitions happening at one time. Mary Leun will be coming back on board after her fall semester on sick leave, and it will really be her very first semester fully in the role.
Has she met the current group of students there?
Briefly. In December, we had a goodbye party for, early in December, we had a goodbye party for Peter.
Peter, right.
And we always have an end of the semester party for the students anyway, the students that have really worked hard. And so she got to meet them at that time, but things are a blur.
Yeah.
So right now we're making plans how to sort of bring her into the life of the students. And so trying to figure out what group of students to best. And that's actually sort of difficult to know right now because she's dealing with a physical ailment,
right,
and going through her own changes in recovery. We're not sure what she can do.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the agreement when she came on board was that she would not be able to get her halftime teaching release. Every faculty director gets a halftime teaching release through LNS, but because we recruited Mary late in the game a year ago, she has to continue her full teaching load for the rest of this academic year.
Oh my.
And steps into her role as, I think, chair of graduate studies in the comparative literature department. So she isn't having any sort of release from her workload academically, and then she's taking on the directorship. So it's going to be really interesting to see what she can take on, and then as a result, what Scott and I need to do to
The fallback people. And you, as we were talking before we turned on the mic, you haven't started a search yet for the person to replace Peter?
Correct. The ad is going to go out. It was what I was dealing with right before I came here. January 15th in the Chronicle and of Higher Ed and in some of the other papers. So our idea is to have the person a start date between April 1 and April 15.
Oh, so you're going to get them in this semester.
We're going to try, but as you know, when sort of the academic searches, you just, depending on the pool drives it,
right,
so we can
yeah.
have the best laid plans.
And this is not the best time of the year either to look for someone.
It's terrible, but the job is unique enough and sort of on the cutting edge of where some of these jobs between academic and student affairs are going, that it's a pretty amazing job description in terms of what, and we've heard that it's, you know, pretty. When we did Peter search, we had plenty of applicants, and the ad wasn't out for very long.
Well, that's an interesting thing you raise. I know that the University of Michigan, for example, has had a residential college for a long time, and CRC is. We have Bradley Learning Center. Is this becoming more common now?
Well, I think the name. It's
alternative housing, I guess you could
absolutely
call it.
Absolutely, that's very popular right now. What's not so common, and what makes this job pretty interesting, is sort of having the formal link between the academic affairs side and the housing or student affairs side. That's really rare right now. And a lot of what we're seeing are student affairs divisions driving this, let's do these residential colleges, let's do these learning communities, without taking the time to gain the academic side's buy-in. So there certainly are a number of great examples of really important learning communities that we're learning a lot of things from. Personally, at conferences, I think CRC is one of them that's actually has a lot to be sharing about how we're doing it. But we're lucky to have the academic tie-in. And so Peter's job is truly an academic affairs job, which makes it really
so
unique.
That'll really legitimize that part of it.
Absolutely.
I remember, didn't Bill say, wasn't this originally supposed to be an honors dorm? I think it was. A long time ago,
right
at the very, very early stages, and that was scrapped early on.
He came on as the honors director, and then sort of had this vision down the road. Bill Cronin, correct. And so then down the road, he had some ideas about expanding it. So
now the development is going to be in that area.
I
think the other thing about this coming semester, it's going to be an interesting test for CRC as well. Your flexibility, your administrative flexibility, You guys are going to be doing a lot of, well, you've always done that, though, haven't you? You just sort of faced with a new situation every 15 minutes of every day.
Well, and we're also just dumb enough to forget about the pain of the previous semester. So we keep on thinking, oh, nothing could be that bad. And then we enter, and it's not necessarily that it's bad, but it's hectic, it's chaotic. And it always is, and we always act like we have it fixed, and then something happens. And
you must be real good at tap dancing.
We are. We just, whatever. But the other major, right now, transition, as well as not only bringing Mary in and dealing with Peter's loss, but is that this is my last semester.
Yes.
And I've told I've made it known to housing, and so we are planning, we're right now in the midst of planning, and I know we'll talk about it later, but my finding my replacement, but then there's this whole transition about how to begin archiving what I've done in terms of my role, which is mind-boggling for me right now. I can't even, barely have the energy to summons to do it.
Yeah, we will talk about that. We've got to catch up on you. We left your relationship and your coming to Madison a long time ago, and we'll get to that in just a few minutes. As I mentioned to you earlier, before we went on, when I did some of these earlier interviews, there were only a few people that we had to talk about, Bill Cronin and Scott, and that was before you came, Scott Seifert?
Mm-hmm. Seifert.
But the cast is getting larger by the week, it seems. And I'd like to do something I've never done before, just a little name association thing. I want to throw out some names of some of these people who have been so important to CRC since its initial inception. And I'd like you to just comment on them, if you would. Bill Cronin.
Well, I don't know where you possibly begin. I suppose you could listen to your hours of interviews about Bill, but Bill has really been so vital in sort of having this vision that's so different and unique, and also has the political cachet at the university to be able to help bring that to light, because at an institution like this, CRC just doesn't exist at Research One institutions like this, and Bill has sort of enough history and his importance in his own field
his that
he's able
clout, yes.
Yeah, he's able to just to help have the conversations that need to have happen to try to gain sustainability, which I think right now we're right in the middle of trying to answer that question about how sustainable is this. Mm-hmm. And aside from all his mentorship and guidance and friendship, I just think he was the exact right person to get this thing on the map and sort of in the hierarchy sort of vision about where we need to go with undergraduate ed.
Well, speaking of sustainability, isn't this coming semester kind of a test of that?
It's huge. It's really huge. And trying to plan for my departure is actually trying to figure that piece out. As it turns out, we've always knew that when an RLC left, it was going to be a huge test. We seem to be surviving the tests of Bill leaving.
Yeah, the tests are coming, yeah.
But in terms of the RLC transition, it's not clear how that's going to go. For 100 different reasons. So,
Marion Lanes.
She was really the reason that she's really sort of the fairy godmother of the program on housing's end. She was the exact right person to approach in housing at the time that Bill approached her, which I guess now is going on 5 or 6 years ago, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Starting to be a history.
Right. Marion was the one person that was sort of high enough in the organization at that time who had sort of vision and a, hey, let's try something new. Mm-hmm. And Bill approaching her was the exact right person. It's sort of between Bill and Marion, you couldn't have had a better combination for enough pull in their respective organizations to get something done. So she's really the reason why housing, I think, is bought in.
Paul Evans.
Well, we're really lucky to have had Paul become a director when we did. the previous director had been there a long time, it's my understanding, and these kind of programs were not necessarily a priority for him. Mm-hmm. And Paul has come in, has been with the organization for a very long time, which sort of makes him interesting in that respect, that he's very much born and bred of the housing organization. He's been over 20 years in it, but has been able to step into a role and think about what housing does differently than, and he's always, in his work throughout housing, if you track his career in housing, he's been involved with the funkier projects.
Yeah, he's had a very interesting career.
Right. And he's taken some of that sort of courage to try something new and provided a lot of direction. He's also on the hot seat within his own organization because he steps in at a time when many, many people were promoted under the old
mm-hmm.
directorship and vision.
Right.
And he steps in, and this is the cast of characters mm-hmm. he is sort of challenged to lead and bring to a different place. And so he's in a tough position, and I think from my perspective, doing a really great job, mm-hmm. and has really given CRC some of the boost that it needed to start answering the sustainability questions.
Another housing person, Kevin Helmkamp.
Kevin is, Chadbourne Hall is located in the southeast area in housing. They've divided the halls up into, the undergraduate halls up into two areas. Kevin oversees the four halls that comprise geographically the southeast area, Whitty Ogs, Celery, and Chadbourne. Kevin is in a really difficult spot, and so he supervises all the professional staff that run these buildings, and he sort of deals day-to-day with the emotions that come from having a program that looks like it's situated just like every other program
mm-hmm.
in the division, yet is drastically different than
mm-hmm.
every other
mm-hmm.
program in his
mm-hmm.
area. So he sort of has the monkey that's messing up, you know, and
yeah.
sort of it's challenging the family. And all of the things that go with that. And he's been really crucial in granting us sort of special dispensation to go do something the housing's never done before, and has been really willing, in partnership with me, I think, to take the leap and be sort of nervous about, okay, the students want to do a Habitat for Humanity spring break trip for the first time in housing's existence. The students have never taken a trip ever, and Chadbourne decides, let's do it. And Kevin's the one that sort of takes the deep breath and says, okay, Jen, let's do it. Show me what you want and show me how you want to do it. And so he's got probably, in my mind, one of the most difficult jobs in housing, and has sort of felt the effects of the changes Chadbourne has wrought, wanted or unwanted. He's been the one that has to deal with it, with the other folks that are most affected by that, negatively or positively.
Heck, he'd have a tough job even if Chadbourne wasn't in his group.
You're right.
Whitty Ogg and Celery.
You're absolutely right. He directs an area that is the size of two small liberal arts colleges.
Yeah, it's an amazing, anyone familiar with those areas knows that anyone would have their hands full with just those three, and then throw in you guys, oh my God.
So.
Scott Seifert.
Well, Scott has been, currently he's the one that's, along with Kevin, sort of that lasted the longest. During the ramp-up year when Chadbourne was just Chadbourne Hall, and then during its first year. And he is, I guess also, we've been really lucky to have the perfect people in their respective roles. Scott is the Live Out Residence Life Coordinator and has got this really neat vision for how life of the mind can manifest itself as a priority in a residence hall setting, particularly in a high-rise residence hall setting, where typically people look at them and think about, you know, zoos where
right.
kids are running rampant and damage. And a lot of that Scott has thought really intellectually about, and talks a lot about the culture of anonymity that exists in high-rises. And a lot of his work is visioning different things that we could do together as a community to build that sense of common experience and break down that culture of anonymity. And he's really been an amazing head to have in the mix, because he brings a really unique perspective that I have not found often in working with housing. He's born and bred sort of the housing thing.
Yeah.
He's got a counseling degree, which is really important, but he's very wise in a different kind of way. So just the right person.
Well, after your departure, he is really going to be the
right.
link to those, to the early years. I guess we're starting to define these, the first of the Cronin years.
Yeah.
Mercedes Ramirez Fernandez.
Well, again, these people are really wonderful and special people. Mercedes is, came on, I think, I don't know exactly the circumstances under which she came on, but she was really interested in doing something different, and similar to myself, was really drawn to the idea of, although she was here in the beginning, the first year,
mm-hmm.
but she's also the exact right person. She's an academic advisor who thinks about academic advising really differently, and understands the importance of being part of the life of the community. And so Mercedes is involved in a million things that, under the auspices of academic advisor, she doesn't need to necessarily be involved in, but understands the payoff for the student's experience and how that can be really seamless. And so being really flexible and having students come down just out of bed in their pajamas to sit in her office to get academic advising, you know, and she's there late nights hanging out and, you know, doing things just because she's a really good soul and cares a lot about students. So she's been an important member of sort of the RLC faculty director, Mercedes. It's just been really important to have her there.
I mentioned this yesterday, but I just have to say it again. The hours for the adults, for the people who are on staff, People who don't work in housing just don't understand that.
Right.
I know when Bill Cronin was director, he'd be here till midnight, and you don't leave those forum meetings because you're too tired,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they just go on for hours and hours, and or they used to, especially.
They used to,
yeah,
right.
I guess they're down to 1 hour now. But,
right. But even still, that after the forum meeting, it's a great time to just check in with students.
That's right.
You're there till
11:15. That's right. Maury Cotter.
Maury's been an amazing ally. She's a member of steering and director of Office of Quality Improvement, but she's got a really wise head about organizational behavior and has been really important in sort of helping guide housing and Chadbourne, sort of trying to figure out how it is that one another behaves due to our organizational structure and our values, and figure out the best way to deal with some of the problems that really cut against both programs.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's been really wise and just very fair. And so we often go to her to just check things out. Mm-hmm. Hey, Maury, what do you think about this? She's also a wonderful soul and is really involved in the community, getting to know students, and just thinks it's really fun to, you know, just hang out. She's got children of similar age and
yeah.
really enjoys that age group. And having her on steering is really important, too, because she's a firm believer that one of the two important things about Chadbourne, one is that the lessons learned from Chadbourne have to be spread throughout the campus,
mm-hmm.
that we can't be insular and sort of, this is what we learned and let's keep it to ourselves. But we always have to be thinking about, how is this translatable to the other residence halls on campus? She's really always a strong voice for that. And she's always a strong voice for the Chadbourne not being an elitist program, meaning that having a random sort as the way that you get into the program means that we don't select our students. And that means that you get a kid who maybe is mildly interested, maybe their parents checked, yeah, I want my kid to be in Chadbourne Residential College, and you take that kid from where they walk into the building in August and help them understand the value of being part of a community
mm-hmm.
in a way they never understood before. And that's the real work of the
mm-hmm.
program,
mm-hmm.
that it's easy to take a kid who comes in, you know, jumping and screaming about how much they want to be part of this,
mm-hmm.
you know, this community that's really vibrant, but the kid that's not so sold, and then selling them
mm-hmm.
and having them figure out how to contribute is really the work of the program. And she's very sort of firm and is always speaking and arguing on that behalf whenever we're in our heated arguments and steering about.
Well, that must be,
like that.
We haven't talked about that. That must be an interesting thing, the degree of involvement. I think it was Bill Cronin who was saying, sometimes you get kids who come in and they look like they don't care, and they end up being some of the real leaders, and,
mm-hmm.
and the opposite can be true as well. Have you ever done any studies, either informally or formally, with the staff as to how, do you have ways of categorizing, like, the really involved and the sort of involved and the uninvolved?
Well, I think it waxes, no, and I think we intentionally don't, because we try to define being involved in the community as in any way the student wants to make, sort of define that. That if it means that their door is always open,
mm-hmm.
and they're the first one to share their cookies from home
mm-hmm.
with whoever, you know, and try to get to know everyone on their wing, that's really important in a way that's different than Andy Underwood Boltman's involvement
mm-hmm.
as chair of the forum, but equally
mm-hmm.
important. And so we do know, though, from surveys that we do every semester, that there's certainly a, you know, a section of the building, you know, maybe, I don't know, the numbers change, but let's say 150 students that are very, very involved.
Mm-hmm.
And then you probably have another 200, 300 students that are just really like living there. They like that people know each other. They keep their door open. They're talking in the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, it's not, they really enjoy, and they're trying to get to know people from other
mm-hmm.
floors. But maybe they don't come to the forum meetings, and maybe they come to a coffee house event every once in a while, but they just really like the
mm-hmm.
atmosphere and can't identify entirely why, but they really do. And then you always have, you know, your 150 that live there because it's a sweet location.
Great location.
They could care less about anything that's going on in the program,
mm-hmm.
yet they're good souls, you know, all
yeah.
the same, that they're not,
they
they're, not
have different
they're not stuff. Taking away from others' experience, they just really don't care about
yeah.
it. So,
Dave O'Brien.
Well, Davo is probably, Davo is what I can't not call him Dave. Davo is.
Davo. You can call him Dave.
He was probably one of the most important students when I first entered the program that helped me understand what this program had been and what it is now, because he was president of the Hall Association his sophomore year when it was Chadbourne Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And so he could talk for 2 years about Chadbourne Hall and being someone who loved the Hall Association and was angry with Bill Cronin and what a big jerk, thinking he'd come in here and change the way that they do business, and could talk very in a way that it made sense to me about how then what the simple things that we do about getting people together and leading with our values, how that dramatically affected the community in a way that he could testify to, mm-hmm. that it was just there were two different places, and he does that really eloquently. He's also really great at being able to relate to a range of students, because he was the student that thought this was ridiculous, and then he was a student mm-hmm. who was super involved house fellow, and then he was a program advisor who saw students that maybe weren't zealous CRCers, but really thought, well, what does this program have to offer me? And so has seen a lot of different perspectives and can talk about really intelligently about why each of those are important and we need to have all of them, and not sort of be this one sort of yay CRC, you know, that we need all the different cast of characters involved. So,
well, for anyone listening to this tape, I did interview Dave, and he does talk about a lot of those things, and very eloquently, as you said, so I encourage people to listen to that tape.
Yeah.
Katie Gibbons.
Well, I feel like she and I have come of age together in some respects. My first year here was her year as the chair of the board. So she was a freshman, and then when I came in, she was a sophomore, and so she was taking her first leadership role. And so she and I have really figured this thing out together, and have worked really closely together in her different roles as chair of the board, as a house fellow, now as my program advisor. So I see her every day. But she is somebody who really understands one of the goals of CRC is to help students own their educational experience and not just participate in it. And that's been an important sort of message that she's drawn, and something that she's taught me a lot about working with students about how to help them own this journey, and it's not something that's handed to them or given to them. So when people ask her, she talks beautifully about the program, and anytime we get a chance to have her do public speaking about the program, we put her up there. She's amazing. But she's, you know, talking a lot about how some people will say, well, so you've done CRC in your spare time, and her response is, no, CRC is my education. It's not, this isn't something I do in my spare time. And it's really helped me think about the ways in which this program can affect students as well. That's actually a really powerful message that I don't think we were always as aware of in the beginning about that kind of impact, but she sort of spoke to it really eloquently.
Again, I interviewed Katie, and her interview is on file. I encourage people to listen to that interview. Andy Underwood-Boltman.
Well, Andy is this really funky guy. He's a chair of a forum this year. He was a freshman last year, and applied. We had a vacancy in the Diversity Mission Group support staff position, and Andy applied. And at the time, the Diversity Mission Group chair was not well suited for the role, but we felt like it was better to have somebody in the role than to open a year without anybody in the Diversity Mission Group role. This can be a daunting task for majority students in particular who typically apply. But so Andy steps into my office, and he's got this funky colored hair and
blue.
Sometimes it's red, sometimes blue. The other day, a couple times it's been tricolored this year. So, and he is very, very intelligent and comes from a very liberal family that thinks really differently about education. And So if you get a chance to interview him, talking about his high school experience is really amazing, because they really took the school system to task on some major things. And he came into Chadbourne very leery about the concept of community, because for him, community meant like-minded PTA folks that sort of were driving...
Student council.
Exactly, driving what education meant. And little did he know he was perfect for that, for CRC as a result. That, in fact, one of my big things is that one of the things I try to do is undo the student council way of thinking about communities, because it's so inbred in students when they in high schools, and they come to college and keep on and look for the same opportunities. And I'm trying to blow that to pieces, because I just think it does more to hinder leadership than help it. But so Andy, he did a beautiful job, really ended up leading the entire Diversity Mission Group as a freshman, and then as a sophomore has really been very critical of the program, and not somebody that just says, hey, this is great, I'm just going to think it's great. Every step of the way, well, Jen, why do we do it this way? Let's think about this. And then he deconstructs.
Yeah,
okay, so
yeah,
this is something
like this, you have to deconstruct.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, I call baloney here. That's not okay. This is where we need to be heading. And we're always having those conversations. He's very analytical in that respect.
And it keeps you from being complacent, which is the easiest thing to become.
Absolutely.
For anyone. And
absolutely. Absolutely.
Obviously, Sam, you just
yeah, yeah. So he's really great, and has a very good head about the program. And he spoke at our convocation this year, and his convocation address, I had tears in my eyes at the end, just talking about how, you know, he thought this was baloney when he started, and within 2 days, you know, he sort of decided he was going to listen to what we had to say, and next thing you know, he said he just loves it. And I mean, this his story about how he, you know, came to figure out what that community could be something different is really powerful. So
I'll try to get a hold of Andy and interview him.
Yeah, he's great.
Peter Quimby.
Peter was sort of this guy for the past 2 years prior to this fall semester, had been involved in affecting CRC in ways we didn't fully understand because he was involved with the Pathways to Excellence project. Mm-hmm. And so CRC was under him, but not really. I mean, he's sort of working with Bill. And then we got a chance to work with him closely. He came in and very graciously took on the entire faculty director role, as well as the assistant dean job for whatever little of it we could get to. And he really saved us at a time that we could have gone under because there was nothing we could do. Mary being sick, she mm-hmm. needed to take care of herself, and Bill was in Bayfield on sabbatical. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if he was in Madison and could just step in part-time. So Peter really took us at a really critical point and sort of was the bridge to some extent, and actually navigated some very hot political issues surrounding things like House Fellows selection and mm-hmm. and the decision to have Barnard be part of the Chadbourne Residential College come fall 2001. Peter was very instrumental in helping navigate those talks and how we were going to do that. And so in a short time, in one semester as assistant dean, he really handled some major things that he might handle over the course of a year. It was a pretty busy fall semester.
Sounds like it. We have a few more names that we won't talk about today, but for the future, Mary Leone is one of them because she's just starting, and we've talked about her about as much as I think we can mm-hmm. at this point, and also your replacement. But the last name on the list is Jennifer Gilbride Brown.
Who's that?
Let's talk about you. We left you and Colin moving to Madison a long time ago. Boy, I bet it seems like about 20 years ago right now. And then we got on the CRC, and we just haven't gotten back to you. So why don't you catch us up on where you are at this point?
That's actually typical for how my household is run. It's all about CRC, and then I fit in to rest later. It's actually quite telling. Well, Colin found work in Madison and has been very happy. He works with a high-risk health insurance program with the state, so he's left higher ed and is actually really happy to have done so. he says that college students stay the same age, and he keeps on getting older.
Oh,
so.
Tell me about it.
I actually continue to like it, but he, you know, he's a little older. So, but he really has liked Madison a lot. It's been a really good place for us to be. But we've sort of reached this time where there have been some really important questions that have emerged from my work in Chadbourne related to how we support undergraduate education, how we structure and support it, and, as well as how our organizational structures help or hinder change. I think that's been a really important thing that I've been noting going along, and I would like to spend some more time researching it. So I've always wanted to go back to pursue a doctorate in higher ed admin. That's what my master's is in. And Colin is at a place where his work, where he really likes it, but he could stay another year and it would make no difference.
Right.
So he's been really flexible and ready to go as well. So we sort of decided this will be our last, we're going to move this summer as to where.
Now you said that you're in the process of applying for graduate schools. Where are you thinking of?
Well, right now I'm applying to Boston College, Harvard, Ohio State, and Michigan. And we'll see, really. It's really selective. And but my plan is to also then begin a job search in the spring outside of housing. I'm sort of, one of the problems in student affairs is if you spend too long in one area, you become tracked.
Right.
And so I'm very cognizant of that. I don't want to be tracked in that respect at all. So looking at some first-year experience programs and some of those kind of coordinating those kind of programs. But I would really love to go back. Get my PhD. So if I don't get in this way, then I'll probably do a job search and apply as a special student and then get into a PhD program that way. So
and you will, after you get your degree, you will do what?
Well, I think one of the ideas is that a degree, for me, wanting to stay an administrator and work in either student or academic affairs, helps me to be a bit of a free agent in that respect, that having the degree and some different experiences that some of these doctoral programs would offer, I could be jumping around involved in projects that mm-hmm. sort of are on the cutting edge of figuring mm-hmm. out how we either move undergrad ed in a, you know, a new direction, or how we bridge this gap between student academic mm-hmm. affairs. And some of, there are a lot of programs out there that have a lot of potential, but for needing to have some more sort of organization and resources. Mm-hmm. And I think it seems like when sort of reading what's out there, that institutions like Madison are throwing more money in this yeah. direction to try to figure this out. And so wanting to sort of be somebody that has something to say about that.
Yeah.
Right. And really worried about, and really it sort of my youth maybe not wanting to be tracked. I've seen too many people sort of get tracked and then find themselves, you know, 10 years from now thinking, what am I going to do? I don't want to do this anymore. And
that's right.
No one's leaping above me, and I can't. I have a family. And so, and eventually we'd like to have a family. So
yeah,
really
yeah, that's true. It's pretty hard to do with the CRC time commitment.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back. I just want to ask you about some reflective questions about your years at CRC. What do you see as the biggest changes, positive and or negative? What are the biggest changes that you've seen at CRC since you came?
Wow. The program has exploded and expanded in a million different directions. I think when we started, when I began, when we thought about student programming, it probably even still had, we had the idea of making 1,000 flowers bloom, but how to do that, we were never entirely sure. And now, and it seems like every year, really important things, suddenly there are two more really important things, and then three more really important things. So your attention is just spread out over a million different ways. And the interest groups at Chadbourne have gone great guns the last 2 years. And this year, they're just doing a million things. And these are groups that there isn't much structure to them. We don't check in with them. They're just deciding to do stuff, ask for money, and make these really cool things happen. And that's been a really exciting and important change, because if Chadbourne is to not be about the structure, then it can't be about the mission groups, and it can't be about the forum, and it can't be about those personalities. It has to sort of, those are engines to fuel the rest of it. And it's worked. And every year it happens earlier and earlier, to the point that the program advisor and I are pulling out our hair the second week of September, because these students who aren't supposed to do anything till January are at our door. We're like, can we wait a semester? So that's been a really important change. I think another important change has been the progress that CRC and housing have made in trying to figure out how to work through tough issues together. In this past fall, I've seen more progress on that front than I've ever seen. It's been a really hard thing, but an important. I think we're making progress, and I think we've laid out some pretty good ground rules and maybe some different expectations for one another. Still working on it, but I
work
feel like
progress.
We've made progress. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Regarding the students, and this is a very general question, I know, but in what ways does CRC really make a difference in their lives?
Well, I think it opens them up to this. I mean, I think about if I had been an undergrad and had the opportunity to be part of CRC,
yeah.
I can't imagine how different it would have been. Really, I felt like the university during my time really drove my experience, that I was sort of just checking in and checking out, that I'd go to class and maybe I'd join this or maybe I'd do that. And CRC, I think for students, it provides them a wonderful way to enter a really enormous place, that they come in, they have no clue about what they want to do, they know what they were good at in high school, they're really worried about, are they going to make friends and are they going to be able to do the work? Those are their two big questions. And I think we do a really great job at helping them answer those two questions, so that really, once they get those, they meet people, they don't feel anonymous, and they feel like, I know some faculty members, I can go to their office hours, I can even invite them to dinner. Those are two really huge, important steps for students to be able to make at that really young age. And a good example of a brief story that sort of illustrates helping students answer that question is, we had at our interest group bazaar a year ago, so fall of 99, a student came down and he said, looked at Scott and I and said, I want to start an interest group, and I really like Star Trek. Do you think anyone's going to be interested? Now, Scott and I know enough to know that Star Trek, for me, unfortunately, still lives large in the culture. I can't stand it, but Scott really likes it, so we joke about it. We're like, oh, don't you worry. I'm sure you know, you can always find Star Trek playing somewhere. And so he said, well, I'm really nervous. I didn't have any friends in high school. I was a big dork. And I don't want that to happen again. And this is his second day of college.
Yeah. Wow.
And so, you know, of course, I begin to play the maternal role and start crying, you know, hug him, it's going to be okay. And so Scott sits him down at this table, and that was nearer to the front so that we could be keeping an eye on him, and said, here, just sit down. Here's a sheet of paper. Write up what you want to write. Here's your sign-up sheet. And we stopped in 10 minutes later, and he had seven names.
Wow.
And he looked at Scott and I and said, I'm not going to be a dork. I'm going to have friends. People are going to like me. And we were like, you know, excuse me, we need to go take a vacation now because this is what we do. You know, okay, mission accomplished, we can end. But it's the truth that once they begin to answer some of those very important questions that get to the core of who they are in their most insecure sort of moment, and that's what Chadbourne does. And I think we do it well, and we do it quickly. And people don't have to wait till their senior year to figure that out. And then suddenly you look back and 4 years are wasted. And you wish, what if I'd have done that then? I mean, I think students get started pretty fast along that way.
Learning is a two-way street, however. What have you learned from CRC?
I can't even begin. It's dramatically impacted the way that I think about the undergraduate experience for students. I think that I've learned more about how to take students seriously than I think in any other experience, that they are really the core of what I do, and I don't do it to them, that we really truly do it together. And I think oftentimes as administrators, there's sort of subtle messages about how much to trust students and their wisdom, and how much you really need to be involved, and how much this is really your gig. And I think that Chadbourne blows that to pieces, that they're always teaching me all the time about, to that story about the student, the Star Trek. I knew the Intergroup Bazaar was important, but I didn't really know how important that was. And that's not because I did a thing, but because but that opportunity was there, and that student, and we both came together to figure it out. And so I think I take students very seriously in a way that I thought I did before, but I really trust them with some major things. And sort of, I trust them to be really important counselors for me in terms of, okay, I don't know what to do with this. Tell me what to do with this. And oftentimes they come up with something that I couldn't have. And so I hope that it's a lesson also that I've learned, that to stay in touch with students is one of the most important things I can do throughout my career. And I think Bill has experienced that, and some Mercedes certainly, that these are people that have been doing things for years, much longer than I have. And staying in touch with undergrads in that really qualitative way impacts the way you do your work throughout. And so I think that's a value that I now know to hold really close to the vest, that I don't know that I knew that in the beginning. So.
Well, I went to this fall's Intergroup Bazaar, and I must say it was just one of the most delightful experiences I've had in a long time. The kids were, the students were very serious about it, but they were so creative, and they were having so much fun, and you could see that. And also, as somebody who's dealt with, you know, everybody keeps getting younger every year as I get older, I'm sure this must be helpful to the people who come, the faculty who come to dinner and things like that, because it's easy sometimes to just lose touch with that part of the population, and that's perhaps the reason, your main reason you're here.
You know?
I think it's.
And we hear that all the time. People come in and say, you know, I didn't realize, I had one conversation with a student about this class, and next thing you know, I'm getting this email saying how I changed the course of that direction for that student, and little did they know, they taught me a lot about what students really care about in my classroom.
Yeah. And that's what I was saying about two-way streets. I think once people really see how this not only transforms the students, but transforms the staff and transforms the people in the institution, that's going to make a difference. Last question. A couple of years ago, when I was interviewing Katie and Shira Kelber and a couple of David O'Brien, we talked at the end, I think about every interview, about the future of CRC and the concern about what happens when Bill leaves. Would CRC survive that? And indeed, CRC seems to have survived it. What do you see as the future holding for CRC?
That's a really good question. I guess I worry about its sustainability as well, because I think every semester presents a new and different challenge about sort of really important issues that Chadbourne is leading and trying to convince people that they're important issues. And I worry that with the turnover that happens, that how long until you lose the ability to really be able to voice that kind of thing? And also, I think I worry about a lack of recognition about truly how different Chadbourne is. And I know it to be true that it's very different. And I know it to be true through conversations with colleagues, whether they understand exactly what they're telling me or not. And yet I think we still struggle to gain that recognition, and not a recognition just so that we're known as different, but it's important to recognize the fundamental difference in order to be able to sustain it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're always trying to figure out ways that it really isn't that different, then when the people who are the on the ground folks that are running it and sharing the message with students and visioning together with students, when those people are changing over, and then their division is telling them, well, it's really not that different. You mm-hmm. do this, this, and this, and that's what makes it happen. You're dead mm-hmm. in the water. Because I couldn't name three things that we do that make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's every single day. It's a commitment every single day mm-hmm. to make that happen. And that is not a standard way of operating in my current division. And I worry about its sustainability, truly. I really do.
Yeah, you use the word struggle, and it is a struggle, isn't
right.
it?
Right, right. And if you don't get the right people in there that understand the struggle and are willing to work through it together in conjunction with housing, and who knows, it feels like every time it's a crapshoot to some extent about what are you going to get. And so this semester is important in helping answer the question about if we're going to recruit differently, are we recruiting differently because we're recognizing there is an enormous difference, or are we recruiting differently just to try something new so that eventually all the halls can recruit differently? Because I'm not too interested in that.
Oh, this is recruiting for your position.
Right.
Yeah, we really didn't address that one. Let's do that right now. So how is it going to be advertised that's different?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know that. I think I was committed to making a decision very early before I knew where I was going, because I felt like mm-hmm. for the sustainability of Chadbourne, they needed to know well in advance that I was leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of a personal commitment, no sort of expectation mm-hmm. that I did so. And so I told them in November, really, that I had made the decision, partially for my own good, because, you know, every time I have a conversation with Andy Underwood Bolton, I'm ready to sign on for 20 years, and I need to tell myself, okay, this is it. And so as a result, we haven't been able to have very many organized conversations, meaning that Paul and myself and Scott and Mary or Peter, whoever, at the table, it's all happened in very small bunches. But I understand that we're going to be posting the job in January, which is something that we never do. Typically, you post prior to that conference, that American College Personnel Conference, and then you go to the conference and recruit and come back. Well, in past years, there's been some argument as to how successful the conferences have been. I would argue that they have been more successful, but that's because I typically interview someone and feel very differently than some of my colleagues mm-hmm. do about the person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's proven over the last couple of years to be true for Scott, myself, and some of the other coordinators involved with learning communities. We see different things
sure
in candidates. And that is not institutionalized yet. We don't have a voice. We lose all the time on that front because there's only a few of us. And so supposedly the word is that there weren't very many good people at the conferences. And so we're going to try to do a rolling search, meaning it'll be open till filled.
Mm-hmm.
So if we get somebody early in January or February, we could hire them. And together, and I could work with my successor together, that's an idea, until I left in June, or try to get them on board at least so that we could have some overlap for a couple of mm-hmm. weeks working together, which is a good idea. I think it's a really good idea. I think it's more feasible to happen the couple weeks end of the semester overlap than right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it can happen, but I don't get to make the decision, so.
You never know. Just never know.
Right.
Well, I hope to interview you one more time before you leave on this semester, so I think those questions will hopefully be answered at that point.
Yeah.
So let's leave the interview. I want to thank you very much. It's been very, very interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Barry Tyker of the Oral History Project. Today is December 29th, in the year 2000. I'm in the conference room at Steenbach with Jennifer Gilbride Brown. And we're going to talk about Chadbourne Residential College and its relationship over the years, or at least over the years that you've been associated with it, with housing and some of the situations that have developed there. Could you begin by characterizing perhaps the relationship between these two organizations over the time that you've been here?
Yeah.
And then we can go from there to specific issues, but let's get sort of a general characterization to begin with.
Well, I think, you know, one of my colleagues best described it as sort of family systems counseling at its finest, where you have the large family of housing and all of the norms that go with this is how we operate for very good reasons, self-sustainability, efficiency. I mean, it's a huge organization, housing, you know, 6,600 undergraduates and runs like clockwork, and there's a lot of procedures and processes in place. And then this thing of CRC was introduced to housing. It's important to know that Chadbourne was not housing's initiative,
mm-hmm.
that housing was approached to house a program like this,
mm-hmm.
and they already had the Bradley Learning Community, Bradley, which was more of a housing initiative,
mm-hmm.
And in conjunction with some faculty. And as a result, Chadbourne began asking some questions very loudly about how we were doing things, and some people from outside of the family became interested in the family, and then as a result sort of asking some questions about some of the norms. And what emerged, I think, was a lot of trying to figure out how we talk about hard issues together, and we have not done that, I think, as effectively as we could have or should have.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not to blame housing solely.
Mm-hmm.
I think we, for our own, you know, reasons, sort of as we get into issues that are hard and rub against both of us,
mm-hmm.
in the wrong ways, we're holding to important values, but unable to talk about why those are important or to hear one another about,
mm-hmm.
why those are important.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we're in a process of trying to figure out how do we talk about tough stuff. If we ever could figure that out, and not have it feel like Chadbourne was always damning housing,
mm-hmm.
and showing everyone else how they're not doing their job, because I think that's how Chadbourne is often received by housing,
mm-hmm.
is that you're always showing us what we're not doing,
mm-hmm.
instead of celebrating the best of what we could be doing. And so we would like, folks at Chadbourne would like to be sort of recognized, and not publicly recognized, but recognized by our colleagues and our chain of command as doing something that's really contributing to housing's future, because
mm-hmm.
that's what we feel like we're doing. And yet we're often received for very good, important reasons. I mean, I completely understand it as, why do you keep on telling me all the things I should be doing and I'm not doing?
Mm-hmm.
Would you just
mm-hmm.
stop already?
Mm-hmm.
And then we get all the publicity from the press, and the chancellor's glowing about Chadbourne,
yeah.
and no one's really talking about Bradley. And well, we know,
yeah.
we have other learning communities.
So you're overshadowing.
Right.
And you have had tremendous administrative support.
Tremendous.
Have you not? Yeah.
Right, yeah. The provost, you know, Wiley, now going to be the future chancellor, is a very big advocate for what Chadbourne is doing. His undergrad ed has been an important part of his tenure as provost, and we expect as chancellor as well. And the chancellor has also been behind us in different ways. So, yeah, I mean, and LNS is fully behind us, which has been really nice, that they see it as a really important part of their enrichment program. So we've been lucky in that respect.
Yeah.
And other programs in housing don't have the kind of academic support that we have. So,
yeah. Well, let's just talk about two or three of those issues that have come into conflict in the years that you've been here. One that you mentioned was the whole concept of, is it selecting house fellows?
Right. The house fellow selection saga, as I would characterize it, because it is ongoing, is one of those areas that really cut against the grain. One of the things that a value for housing, and a very good important value, is that when you're selecting house fellows, you're selecting the eight strongest staffs for the eight different units,
mm-hmm.
in housing, and that has to be the overriding value. And that may mean that in some years, if Cronsage is really lacking in a strong male pool to be interviewing from, or they just interviewed all their males and they not very good, other units need to be able to contribute,
mm-hmm.
because fundamentally we all need to have the eight strongest.
Mm-hmm.
staffs, and that's a really important value. One of the problems that comes into play for Chadbourne is that we have found that an important skill criteria for working, being a house fellow in Chadbourne, is having lived the Chadbourne experience. That there is something about living in the community in your first years of college and teaching you that this is how it is,
mm-hmm.
that is work that gets done in those first 2 years that myself as a supervisor and Scott as a supervisor can't be doing in your first year as a house fellow,
mm-hmm.
your third year in college. That you need to come sort of already understanding why this place is important, why it's important to you, why it can be important to others. Because the house fellows, there's one house fellow for 68 residents,
mm-hmm.
and they do the most critical work at the most critical time, those first couple weeks,
mm-hmm.
of role modeling and getting people excited. And because basically we open up the year pretending Chadbourne exists, because it doesn't.
Yes, right.
And we need to all fool ourselves, and if we pretend hard enough, then it comes to reality.
Yeah.
But if Scott and I are spending you know, 7 out of the 9 months convincing a house fellow that this really exists, yeah. imagine the damage on the floor.
Yeah, right.
And we've seen it. And so one of the things that, one of the ways that we've seen it is when you come from another hall that has more of a structure about how people are involved, this is how it is.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the hall association, you do this, you hold these offices, you get recognized for being resident of the month, you get doing all this kind of stuff. It's actually nothing that we care about at Chad. Absolutely none of it. I could not be less interested in holding a resident of the month program, mm-hmm. because in my mind that's ridiculous. That if you've got a community where everybody's contributing, how on earth mm-hmm. are you to say this is the resident mm-hmm. of the month? And oftentimes, and I think you're rewarding people for the wrong kind
right.
of incentives for leadership.
They keep the cleanest room or yeah.
right, right, and it's the and so students then begin to do things for the wrong motives.
Yeah.
The place is fully based on altruism. Chadbourne is all about you just volunteer your blood, sweat, and tears to make it happen. And certainly we have some paid positions to help make sure some of the grunt work happens, but even those you've got to go knowing you're gonna work much more than you'll ever get paid for. But the reward is intrinsic, and the reward is all around you. But if you're running around trying to figure out what award you can apply for and who you can impress and what 5 students you need to sell yourself to so that you can be in the in-group, that's a problem, and that is a reality in other halls. That's changing. I know that the culture in other halls is changing, but it's changing slowly.
All right.
And it's not that it should be changing faster. It's just that we are in a very different place,
mm-hmm.
and I don't see it coming together anytime soon, because every year we have a couple house fellows on staff that have not lived the experience, and all year long we're convincing them that this is how it needs to be. And so then all year long they're raising questions about, well, this is sort of baloney, and you know, this place, no one really cares about you here because no one's recognizing you here, and you should see how it's like in other halls. And you spend, as coordinator Scott and I spend an enormous amount of time convincing house fellows to get on board, and it's damaging to the program. That doesn't mean that we don't need new blood every year, absolutely. I'm a firm believer that it's important to have a few house fellows who haven't lived the experience.
Mm-hmm.
But what we need is a selection process that enables us to have a say about who those people are. And those people coming in from the outside are there because they want to try Chadbourne,
mm-hmm.
not because our pool was weak and then someone gave us whoever,
mm-hmm.
and they get a letter saying, you're going to be a house fellow at Chadbourne Residential College, and they freak out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had situations in the past where we had to hire two people from a hall, and because we weren't able to have a say too much about who we got to interview, and some of our really strong people were farmed out to other halls.
Mm-hmm.
There was a priority at one time that a way to lead change in housing was to take the CRC kids and put them in other halls.
Mm. Oh, I see.
Right.
Yeah.
Instead of relying on your professional leadership,
mm-hmm.
or your residents, the professional leadership either being the management team or your res life coordinators to try to instill some way to excite the community, you're going to bring 19-year-old undergraduates
yeah,
in.
Have them do the job.
One, you know, 2 per 1,000 people, and say, teach us how it was like in Chadbourne. And that was the way it was going, and it was awful. And some of our most important leaders were always at risk of being farmed out. So what would happen then is we would clash. Housing and CRC would clash every time, because we would scream as loudly as possible that this is not okay.
Is this when Bill was?
Yes.
Yeah.
Bill was fully part of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
That we were trying to signal to housing, these are kids we need to sustain the program. And they were saying, okay, but maybe another program needs them. You know,
mm-hmm.
our effort is to get the 8 best staffs. One of the other problems is because The day one, these kids walk into our building, we're talking all this talk about the values of the place. Our students walk into the house fellow process and say these beautiful things about community. Now, we also know that people are complicated, and they can say one thing and do another.
Mm-hmm.
So we may know a lot about some students who walk in and say these beautiful things, are rated very highly by our colleagues, but Scott and I and Bill know them to be disasters as house fellows, not only in CRC, but anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But so we're saying, no, that isn't a good candidate. And they're saying, what are you talking about? Do you question our judgment here? Yes, it is. And so then we look like
mm-hmm.
sort of that we're always whining about
mm-hmm.
something
mm-hmm.
here. So, and it was difficult in that if a kid came in with CRC, came in and had lived CRC, they were sort of labeled as a very high quality candidate, because this is how housing was going to be changing the culture in the other halls. And so one of the things that we found is that this household example is a good example of scrambling to find ways to lead the larger division in a new direction without stopping and paying attention about what it was in Chadbourne that was really, that really created the change. We weren't paying attention to the details, and God and the devil are in the details, and Bill Scott and I say that all the time. The house fellows are crucial, but then so are the coordinators, and then so are our first-year students, and then so are, and there's a million pieces of the puzzle. But housing, I think being an organization that likes things to be very neat and tidy, and this is how it is, and we can explain this via here, was always looking for the answer. What was the thing about Chadbourne that we could export? Okay, you got convocation, great. We're going to get the other hall, another hall to do convocation, and that might change the culture of their building. Instead of, and so then the house fellows, okay, we'll take two of yours and move them here, and let's see how it goes. And it was detrimental to the sustainability of our program. And we knew that it was not the way to lead change in the other buildings. So it's taken, we've made some progress. We, for this year, for the first time, we've got a brand new process. But that process, changing the process didn't come about because housing wanted it to. It came about because there was a tremendous political pressure to do it.
Political pressure from whom?
Well, I think we yelled loud enough, and some people pretty high up heard us.
Okay.
And Paul Evans also heard us, although Paul is stuck in some respects. That he's, this is a situation where, again, you're dealing with an organization who people were promoted and rewarded for being a certain kind of worker. Mm-hmm. You come in, and there's mandates to change all over the place. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is due to Chad. And you're dealing with the same personnel. It's not like you get to clean house. And not that you should, either.
Right.
And that, as a result, that kind of change in the leadership comes really slowly. And so I think there needed to be a lot of her little political pressure to say, do it. You change this process now. You will kill CRC if you don't change this process. And so we've changed it. But when you don't change it because you wanted to change it, you change it because you were forced to change it, the reality of how that goes is still to be determined. But it's been really interesting for me to watch the reaction of people and how they might lead it within their own division when they were being told, you have to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you want to, you have to. And trying to get other people on board. I think we are, as an organization, we are not as good at getting all the key players on board. And it's an important lesson I think we have learned. I've learned, housing's learned, that if you're going to make a change, you better identify the key people that you get on board.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just say, well, they're just going to do it differently here, and if these people are upset about it, they're just going to be upset. There's a point to which you need to get those people either on board or off the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the House Fellows selection is a good example of they were forced to make a change, and now I think trying to see who's going to get on board, and not to say that that means people are off the bus by any stretch, but who's going to get on board, and I think it's making it a little bit clearer about who has never been signed on for the project, and people pretty high up never signed on for the project, don't know a thing about the project, and the people that know most about the project, I think Paul Evans has done a great job at educating himself about the project. Kevin Helmkamp certainly knows about the project, but in terms of why it works and how we run it, housing is for the most part in the dark about it.
So that's going to take work on Paul's part to educate these people.
Right.
And it's going to take work on your part to educate these people.
Sure,
and to try to understand more from where they're coming from.
Right.
So that's where you said that dialogue, that ongoing dialogue is happening now.
Right. It's just started.
Well, none of that's going to happen unless what started right now
is
successful.
Right.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Right. So we're living the selection, a new selection process right now, and my hope is that people can be open enough to the outcomes of it. Already we've heard some people grumbling about so far what's happened, and we're in the middle of it. And I think some people are ready to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
You mean regarding House Fellows?
Regarding the new process, and say, well, the old process was better. See, now you've got a problem here.
Yeah.
Well, we knew there were going to be problems with the new process. But again, I think you find who was on board because they were told, you've got to do this. People are watching, and who was on board because fundamentally they thought, let's try something different here. Maybe there is something, maybe the people at Chadbourne have been yelling for years about something that actually exists.
Yeah.
And oftentimes we feel like we're yelling sort of in a hole to some extent. So it's been a good lesson, and for me is sort of thinking about future moves, about remembering to take time to figure out who are the major stakeholders within your own organization that need to buy in whatever way makes sense for them, because I think we miss that part entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Large portions of important residents' life leadership didn't have to be bought into the Chadbourne project at all. Mm-hmm. And it's made it that much harder.
And you are an alternate structure after all. You know, you are different. You are mm-hmm. different from the mainstream. That's one of the reasons you're so successful. So finding people who are different, who understand that, like you said, I bet you can just sit down at a table and within 30 seconds you can tell whether that person would be a candidate for a House Fellow in Chadbourne.
Right.
Or not.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you've got that whole thing to deal
right.
with. Yeah.
And to say that is actually really hard. It's hard to say that to other colleagues. They feel like you're telling them that they're stupid.
It's not a judgment. It's an intuitive thing. You're not saying that's a bad person.
Right.
You're simply saying this is not a person. This person might be great over at Crossage.
Right.
Might be the best Liz Waters has ever seen.
Right.
Okay.
But when the leadership isn't willing to say Chadbourne truly is different, then there is no support for us saying that. And that's what we're living right now.
So that's what you're trying to do is convince them that you truly are
different.
Yeah. Mm. So. Another issue that you've dealt with that you said related to your relationship with housing has to do with the funding structure. Mm-hmm. Could you talk about that for
sure.
a little bit?
Well, we have a $300 membership fee,
right.
And that generates that budget of about $200,000+. And as a result of having that money, we're able to do a lot of different things. There's just a lot of freedom for the students to do things. We typically aren't dealing with budget crunches. We're not affected mm-hmm. by sort of larger, right now, being in an energy crisis right now with the heating bills rising and the budgets didn't get bigger. You know, right now housing, just like every other organization, is dealing with budget crunches. Well, mm-hmm. we're immune to that to some extent because we have the programming money that, not totally immune to that, I shouldn't say, but certainly we have the money to be able to continue to sustain the program. And one of the things that when I arrived here, my colleagues were always trying to explain away why Chadbourne was different. It wasn't different because there were, that we were doing things differently. It was different because, well, look, you got the best students and you got a lot of money. And so for a while, it was believed that, and I think it still is, that Chadbourne is the way it is because they skim off the top mm-hmm. in terms of the students and they have all this money. Well, my second year here, Paul did a really wise thing and changed the funding structure for programming in the halls dramatically. In the past, the halls had to fundraise to get together a bunch of money mm-hmm. to do programming for the whole year, so they had to sell hall memberships.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Paul said, no, we're going to do it like they do at Chad. Everyone's going to be a member of the Hall Association. And I'm going to give you, there's going to be a $30,
mm-hmm.
well, at the time it was an amount to be determined. Tell me how much money you need, that's what he said. Tell me. How much money do you want per student to generate a budget that you could be doing some really cool things mm-hmm. in the hall? Well, because we don't have the leadership to help educate the coordinators about the possibilities, we sat in a meeting, and while Scott and I had been criticized and isolated from our colleagues because we have the money, we have the best students, we're sitting in a meeting where the leadership is saying, how much money do you want? And the coordinator's response is, we don't really need that much. This was a key moment to changing, if you give them the resources, imagine all the things you can do. But because the leadership is not equipped to help the coordinators imagine, blue sky fantasy is what we do all the time at Chad. We are always dreaming. And if the ethic isn't there within the larger organization, then what? So what do they do? Well, how much do they sell the Hall Association memberships for now? $30 a student. Okay, Paul, give us $30 a student. So no net gain in how much money they had. Yet they had been complaining and criticizing us for having much more money, and if they only had the money, look what they could do. And they were given the opportunity.
Why didn't they?
Because there's no leadership to show that.
Were they trying to maybe please housing by not asking
for
more?
No. They really couldn't imagine what they would do with more money. So that was really key. And this was about 2 years ago. And the subject came up again about 6 weeks ago, and the response was the same.
Has there been carping right along that you guys have more money?
Absolutely. We've been called. I was in a program, and I was leading a program on classism, and one of my colleagues said to another colleague in the middle of the program, so loud I could hear it, I asked the students to identify classism in their own housing environment to begin to deal with some of this, and they said, well, CRC is the biggest classist beast in housing. Very nice. And this was 6 months ago. And a lot of this flows from the amount of money we have. But Paul has been saying, how much do you need? Tell me how much do you need? Paul Paul can't do all of this. He's managing an enormous organization. He can't be the leader to help figure out ways for Chadbourne, the lessons from Chad, to be expanded to the other halls. And I think the leadership has been relying on the coordinators to provide the leadership and vision for this change, and that can only get you so far. These coordinators are never stay in their positions very long.
These are area coordinators?
These people like myself in other buildings, residence life coordinators, that are either have been in the organization 5 years or less.
Okay.
And they're the ones that are supposed to lead this. Instead of saying, okay, you're going to get this much money. Paul, you're willing to get, well, I'll give you up to $100. Okay, fine. You know, finding out exactly what Paul was willing to give us up to and then asking for that amount of money. But those conversations never happen. So the answer is, well, we're doing pretty good right now. And then one of the important things is Scott and I have found that having a pot of money at Scott's and mine and the faculty director's sort of at our availability, we can spend money on ramping up programming for each semester. So we spend a lot of money at the beginning of the semesters on big programs that get everybody together, they get everybody excited, and they're expensive programs.
An example
would be some of our big banquets. Convocation, for instance, we have to rent out the Union Theater, and then that's about $1,000, and then we do a big, huge banquet that's about $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets students together and talking, and faculty and students talking, and it seeds all these wonderful things, and then we head off to a pizza extravaganza that'll cost another $1,000. And we'll get 500-600 students getting to know one another.
Yeah.
And that's an example of one day out of, and we'll spend a lot of money like that, and we know that it's important, and the students tell us, Welcome Week was really important. Every minute of the day, there was something fun and big to do. And not always big, like 500 people, but this was really important for me as I look back. That was a really critical moment, or this was... And we've argued often, we've said to our colleagues, if you can get that money, you don't have to rely on the students to come up with all the ideas. You can seed the students' ideas. You can begin it and then have the students take over. Fall on deaf ears. And there's no, and even though the leadership who know, and within housing, that know Chadbourne the best, understand that to be true, they don't step in.
Why not?
I think it's a vacuum, a leadership vacuum to some extent, within Res Life.
Mm-hmm.
And Res Life is one of the areas under Paul Evans. And I think people are just stressed out and overextended, that we're trying to change all over the place. Everyone's working as hard as they can. None of the management personnel has ever changed during the course of this significant change in leadership vision. There's never been any significant training for coordinators or the management team to really figure out a way to do this differently. And they're all good people working as hard as they can, but there's never been a concerted effort to change the way we lead the division,
So there's sort of a disconnect there. You have a lot of good people doing different things in good ways, but they're not connecting.
Absolutely.
And doing that sharing. Like Paul has a good idea to increase the amount of money that you give them, and the residence life people work hard to make their dorm, but they don't understand what he's talking about.
Right.
Now, what role do you and Scott, are you able to play any kind of role in that, or are you guys kind of looked at as the favored people who don't have any need to get really involved in this?
Yeah, it's interesting because I would say that in terms of being the favored, sort of the favored children, it's actually the opposite. We're actually viewed as... very different from the rest of housing, I think. But that being said, I've worked really hard. I've made it a priority that I could be somebody who, I understand why this is hard. I'm not damning any of these people. It has to be terribly hard.
Yeah.
And I recognize the slap in the face that sometimes can come from working really hard. You're working, you know, you're working in your buildings. You're trying, it's not like you're slacking off, and yet you've got this building that you feel like it's accusing you all the time of not doing the best that you could be doing. At what point does it ease up? And so I've worked really hard at being really compassionate, and I understand that this is hard. And so I've tried to be somebody who really likes to brainstorm with my colleagues and to not appear to have all the answers, because I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I understand I'm in a really fortunate situation. Mm-hmm. I get to work with these really intelligent, creative faculty people that are really dedicated, and Scott, who has this great vision, and I'm really lucky, and Mercedes, and I know that, and I recognize the gifts that flow from that. And so some of the things that I've tried to do is brainstorm with them and give some suggestions without appearing to have all the answers. Because I think they feel like Chad has all the answers and they're dispensing them slowly.
Right.
And that's not the case. Yeah. It's just that, you know, for a lot of different reasons, we've brought a lot of different factors together that enable us to...
Well, you've talked about these and you've thought about them and
right.
you've dealt with them and lived them.
Right.
And you have pressure from the students pushing you... Here you've got Andy sitting down with you and telling you, hey, this stuff you think's been working, why? It's a bunch of junk.
Right, right. And we're really open to being picked apart.
Yeah.
And
you see, there is the key right there. Are the other units open to being picked apart? I would...
I think that they feel like they're picked apart whether they were open to it or not. You know what I mean? And I think, and didn't ask to be picked apart. And so I think I've been pretty successful. I would say that professionally, relationships with colleagues are pretty good. That I tend to, they come to me for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. They'll ask, and I give them, we'll wholesale give documents. I mean, here you go. Use it. Change the name. We don't care. Mm-hmm. So our interest group packet, how to make interest groups happen, is a really wise document that sort of helps students figure out how to spend money and what are the rules and where are your resources. And we've handed that over wholesale to a lot of buildings that have asked for it. So, you know, I've been somebody who's been really generous with anything that we've come up with, use it, take it, change the name. We don't have, you know, we don't have...
It's not patented.
Right, right. And I think that's been received by some as being a value, that I feel like I've been a valuable asset. And I feel I can say with most confidence that the leadership, it views me as somebody who had something to contribute. I haven't isolated myself in meetings or committees or any of that kind of stuff. Although my work day, I don't have a lot of time to socialize with other colleagues, and I'm working until really late at night all the time. And my hours are different from a lot of my colleagues. So,
it's different. Do they have more traditional hours?
Yeah.
Is that by choice or is that by,
I think there's a feeling that sometimes their buildings just begin to run themselves after a while. And I've never felt like Chad Warner ran itself. It would be great one day if it did, but it won't. And it's not because it relies on me, but it's just a lot of things.
The nature of the beast,
right,
so to speak.
Right. So the jobs are different, and that affects, I think, the way that we think about our work, the way we do our work. And that creates a sense of isolation as well, I would say.
Looking at where you are now, and looking at who's coming into the picture and the change going on at Chadburn and CRC right now, what do you see the dialogue is continuing? Do you think Mary, Leon, and Paul Evans will continue to have this dialogue? Is Mary aware of the situation?
Yeah. Mary came on last spring, right when the House fellow process. First hit the scene. We'd been talking about what was wrong with it, but sort of the political cards falling, Mary was there for all of it, which is really important. And so she was there for very, very difficult conversations, for some very tough moments. So she saw a spring just wrought with a lot of real tough discussion. I think absolutely Mary is committed to these dialogues. Housing, Paul is definitely committed to these dialogues and learning from how it worked before with Bill and how, what was good about that and what didn't work about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they've learned a little bit more about, if you want faculty to work with you in your program, then you need to work collaboratively with them. They don't need to respond to your hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
They should be able to talk to whoever they want to talk
mm-hmm.
to, and you shouldn't be offended by that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we've made a lot of headway in that respect. And I think Peter Quimby gave us an enormous gift in helping us navigate some of that this last fall. And Mary fully knows what she's getting into. Paul and Mary have had very honest conversations about that. So I feel like we're in a great position to, and I was able to be heard last spring in a way that I hadn't been before. We went to a conference in South Carolina, and we'd go every year to a conference, and we presented, and I was struck by, when I walked away from my session, people come up all the time and they just eat this stuff up. And they said to me, I bet housing is so proud of you.
Mm.
I bet they just can't, they're just so proud of you. And my response, of course, at the time was, oh yeah, sure, yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm,
okay.
Right.
And I came home and I talked to the leadership and said, I don't feel like anybody's proud of a second of work that we put in over there.
Which leadership?
the housing leadership. And it was a great, it started some great conversations that in fact they are really proud of it. They feel beaten up by it.
Yeah.
And
that's
very
interesting.
Yep.
Oh, hold on.
You were saying housing is very proud of you, but they've also been beaten up by you.
Yeah, yeah. And so that was dialogue that happened in the spring about we need to recognize that there are some casualties of this, and if you care about the people in your division, and housing definitely does. I mean, I feel like housing cares a lot about me as a professional, they've bent over backwards now in the last year to make that clear, that they recognize what we've done and what I've done and what I've contributed. And so I think there's been some headway then as a result that it's not all bad. The news isn't always all bad out of Chadbourne, and there are people that care a lot about housing and are trying to show that through their work in Chadbourne, and their two aren't exclusive. That caring about Chadbourne fundamentally means contributing to the division. Mm. And I think we've recognized that in a way that we haven't before. But it's come at quite a price, I would say. So, you know, for me.
Well, in terms of historically and through stages, initially, Bill, there was this, when the problems were first being recognized and brought to the floor, was that sort of the realization confrontational stage at that point? I'm trying to just kind of figure out how it's changed over the years you've been there.
Right. I think when I first got here, it seemed like every 5 minutes there was something major that we were doing that housing had never done before.
Well, you said you had actually thought about quitting
right.
at one point.
Absolutely.
Was that over a particular issue, or was it over just a general feeling?
I think that first year it was over the House Fellows as well, because it used to come in January. We'd get the news that they farmed out some of our most important students, and every year you feel like at that point it's like the straw that breaks the camel's back,
because
you've dealt with a fall of getting the runaround or getting sort of begrudging, yeah, that's fine, and then having colleagues say terrible things to your students because they think they're brainwashed and all this sort of stuff, and it wears on you. And then when they take away the students that you've invested all this time and farm them out to other units where you know, due to the culture in the other buildings, they'll be a flop and they'll have a terrible experience, you just, it's about all you can take to, and I think, that's certainly paid, there's been a price to pay for that. But I've always been heartened by, I've learned a lot about how to be very frustrated and even very angry with somebody, but at the end of the day, be able to sit down and have a beer. That you've got to be able to put it, and that's been an important lesson for me too. So I've always been able to recognize, okay, this is really bad right now, but look at what you're gaining. You have a front seat view on organizational change, and you've got to maintain relationships with these people. And they are really good people. Mm. We're all stuck in some really tough situations. So there's always been enough benefit for me to come back and not sort of leave.
Well, it sounds like a very exciting point right now. The negotiations can really begin in earnest, and people understand the value of each other's side. It'll be very interesting to see what you have to say in spring, and I'm sure we'll interview Mary Leone like next year sometime.
So. Yeah, I think it's been great. I mean, it's been important for me professionally, so I'm going back to grad school, so coming to Price, but that's okay.
Any other comments?
Nope.
Okay, I'd like to thank you again for participating in this interview.
Thanks.
End of interview.